Okay, for real this time.
Steven's just gonna have random 1 second clip of Tim going, oops.
All right, so Proverbs 19. And let's do verses 1 through 9. And again, just ask as we read these, I'm trying to digest each one for a moment. Just a brief pause in between each verse is helpful as we're reading through. And Amy, would you like to read part of that?
Better is a poor person who walks in his integrity than one who is crooked in speech and is a fool. Desire without knowledge is not good, and whoever makes haste with his feet misses his way. When a man's folly brings his way to ruin, his heart rages against the Lord. Wealth brings many new friends, but a poor man is deserted by his friend. A false witness will not go unpunished, and he who breathes out lies will not escape. Many seek the favor of a generous man, and everyone is a friend to a man who gives gifts. All a poor man's brothers hate him. How much more do his friends go far from him? He pursues them with words, but does not have them. Whoever gets sense loves his own soul. He who keeps understanding will discover good. A false witness will not go unpunished, and he who breathes out lies will perish.
Okay, thank you. Any of those stand out? Yes. All right. Good to see you, Stephen. All right. So, any of those through verse 9 that stand out?
Yeah, go ahead. Two quick things. I'm trying to make them quick. So the desire without knowledge is not good, and whoever makes haste with his feet misses his way. It's like just knowing you want something, but either one, not knowing how to get it, or two, the steps to get there, you just kind of rush off in a direction without thinking through it, can get you into a lot of trouble. You miss a lot of things, miss a lot of steps practically, and that can be the same thing with in a spiritual aspect, where if you see, oh, I want to please God, and then you just rush in without looking in his word and reading what is actually pleasing to him, it can lead you astray in a lot of ways. And then verse 6 stood out to me, where many seek the favor of a generous man, and everyone is a friend to a man who gives gifts. And it reminds me of our Job study, where that was Satan's exact accusation about Job to God. He said, he's only following you, and he only worships you because you give him all these good things. As soon as I take that away, he's going to fall. But thankfully, see, that didn't happen.
Yeah. So verse 6, many seek the favor of a generous man, and everyone is a friend of a man who gives gifts. I was looking at that. I think very similar to also the verse 4, wealth brings many to friends, but a poor man is deserted by his friends. These are some of those truisms that it's not a it's but that type of proverb, but that typically is the way that people behave. So I saw kind of a parallel there between 4 and 6.
I thought it was interesting on those that it doesn't give like a whole lot of commentary about all that. A whole lot of commentary on it, but just that's the way the world tends to work. And so when that seems to be, I think those kinds of things can sometimes influence us more than we realize, like how much people like us or how much, kind of what our status in the world is. And to be reminded, like, the way the world looks at things is not necessarily through a very good lens. This person, rich, a lot of people like this person, poor in their views, so it doesn't. It doesn't really have a reflection on their actual worth or anything like that. Just be reminded that those kinds of things don't matter, even though we see it happen.
Right. And it can be a reminder to us that maybe that's affecting the way that we act, the way that we treat people. In James, it talks about tell one person, you're wealthy and rich, come sit in this nice seat. Or in this poor person, you just sit down here on the floor. Don't show partiality like that. There may be ways that we are doing that. That's maybe not the most obvious or most outright way of doing it, but that it still is maybe affecting the way that we think, the way that we think about people. Just to be reminded that that is a good check for us. Any other of these verses?
Yeah, I thought verse 3 was really interesting. My version reads, "When a man's folly brings his way to ruin, his heart rages against the Lord." And so I think it's interesting. So when a person, you know, through their own foolishness, comes to ruin, like bad things happen to them because of their own actions, then they turn around and blame God for it. I think we can see that today too in our society. Maybe not as much in our society, since a lot of people, discredit the idea of God in general. But yeah, I think that's interesting because obviously, it's not God's responsibility when, we refuse to heed instruction and wisdom and go astray. But and it's also a good contrast to, I like that Joe brought up Job. It's a good contrast because in Job's case, then he kind of questioned the Lord, but he didn't rage against the Lord. He didn't curse God, when calamity befell him. And so I think that's kind of an interesting contrast there.
And I think this was one of the verses I was, that caught my attention as well, because I think a lot of times one of the most foolish things we can do is to blame other people for our own
faults,
and not take responsibility for our failures. And one of the most humble things and helpful things we can do is to acknowledge our faults and learn from it, and ultimately learn that we need strength from God and wisdom. Where if we were relying on ourselves before, that was folly itself. Stephen?
I don't actually have a specific comment. I'm just having a hard time hearing you a little bit. Your volume is very quiet. Anybody, if everybody can speak up just a little bit,
okay,
that would be helpful. Thanks. It's weird being on this end of things. So.
Yeah, we don't have a microphone.
Yeah, I realized that afterward. I should have left the microphone for you to pick up. Thank you, Tim, for filling in tonight, but I apologize that it's hard to hear.
Yeah. All right, I'll try to project. All right.
Tim, what chapter is this?
We're in 19, Proverbs 19.
19. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, sorry about that. There's another, let's see, put the 4 and 6. 5 and 9 are also, verses 5 and 9 are both also parallel. A false witness will not go unpunished. He who breathes out lies will not escape. That's verse 5 and verse 9. A false witness will not go unpunished. He who breathes out lies will perish. So those are very similar. And again, I think those are the kinds of things that serve as reminders. There are times where it may be tempting to try to get away with lie or some kind of deceit or something like that, and in the moment it feels like the best course of action to avoid some kind of consequence, but we need to be reminded that ultimately we are still going to be subject to God's justice.
I have a question on that, on the false witness ones, because I see that comes up a lot. And when I think of a false witness, I think of like somebody in a court, like they've been called up to the witness stand and they say something false, which is obviously very wrong. But that's also like not a particular situation that we're necessarily always in as far as like a court case kind of scenario where we give false witness. So I was wondering, like, is that kind of, obviously there's lots of passages that also talk about all falsehoods. Wrong. But when it talks about a false witness, I was wondering, like, what does it mean by a false witness? Is it just like being a witness legally, or just speaking bad about somebody? Just, like, kind of what?
Yeah, because how often do we find ourselves, you know, on the stand, you know, in the court? But I think there is a more general principle of, you know, saying something that could lead to almost like gossip. You're saying things that are bringing other people down. Stephen, did you have a hand up?
Yeah, I do think it's interesting. I mean, one of the Ten Commandments is thou shalt not bear false witness. Which I think is not just, well, when you're under oath in court, then you actually have to tell the truth. But, you know, everywhere else, it's fair game. You know, I mean, clearly one of the things that God values most is honesty and the truth. And so a false witness or bearing false witness, it does call to mind the courtroom. I think the idea is God is inviting us to live like the judge is always in the room because he is. And so we're always, in a sense, on the stand. It's not always the same level of seriousness. And there's a place where we joke with each other or, you know, play tricks on each other, whatever. But if we're honestly trying to deceive someone, whether we're in a court of law or not, God is there and we should bear true witness.
I look at that, like sort of like what Jesus said, you deny my Father on earth, deny you in heaven, because like we're called to be witnesses. And I mean, you know, being honest, sometimes we may portray something that's really not in our heart, you know, project that outwardly, you know, to make ourselves look like shiny Christians. That's like, I think the ultimate, you know, when we're, you know, rejecting or being a false witness, because our walk is supposed to line up with this, but we all know that we're imperfect, and our testimony, like sometimes people need to hear that, you know, that we ain't so perfect, because people on the outside just tend to look at us like we're supposed to be, you know, even though we are delivered, but delivered in the sense like we go through no more struggles, you know,
right.
You know, we don't have anything else. And I think because of that, some people use that platform at times because they don't want to look imperfect in people's eyes, but they don't know how much that's hurting people, because as the word says, you know, what you do in darkness comes light.
Yeah.
And that'll crush somebody, that same person that you witnessed to, and then they see something other than that may turn them away from, and I mean, imagine how God will look at you then.
Yeah. You said two things that I found really interesting. One is we could be a false witness about ourselves, like promoting ourselves in ways that are not true.
And that fall into also the false prophets, as far as giving the wrong word of the Lord to people?
Yeah. I'm not sure if this context is the same as that, but also, like if we're not known for being truthful speakers, or if people know us as somebody who might say something that's false, and then we try to witness to them about Jesus, if we try to share the gospel, but they're hearing that out of the mouth of somebody they can't trust, then we're doing a great disservice to the gospel. By not having been truthful or something.
I was just going to add to this conversation about false witnesses. It reminds me of verse 1, better is the poor who walks in his integrity than one who's perverse in his lips and is a fool. So I guess, especially that comment that Stephen made regarding like, we're always in front of a judge, and that just makes me think of like of having integrity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's interesting how verse 1 just, it's specifically talking about your words, it seems to be, where he's where in the latter part when he's saying one who is perverse in his lips, that's the opposite of a person who's walking in integrity, it seems to be.
Yeah, using that contrast there to find the difference. The person who's crooked in their speech being the opposite. And that verse one, the world, or if we're thinking in a worldly way, we worry about, we might worry about money, I should put it that way, if we're poor. And we might feel unstable if we're poor, but we can be, we can have confidence in things more if we're doing things God's way. We can, if we're walking with integrity, we can have a...
Could that tie into also like Genesis 31, 49 to 50, like may the Lord keep watch when we are away from each other. Then it ends up, even though no one is with us, remember that God is a witness between you and me. So it would be at all times.
Yeah. All right. Any other thoughts on false witnesses or integrity or anything else in these first nine verses? All right. Would someone like to volunteer to read verses 10 through 19, please? 10 through 19.
I can read it. I don't care. No, it's better if someone's in person. That's good.
Oh, okay. Thank you, though.
One was volunteering, so I had to say something, guys.
Okay. 10 through, you said 19?
19, yes.
All right. It is not fitting for a fool to live in luxury, how much worse for a slave to rule over a princess. A person's wisdom yields patience. It is to one's glory to overlook an offense. A king's rage is like the roar of a lion, but his favor is like dew on the grass. A foolish child is the father's ruin, and a quarrelsome wife is like a constant dripping of a leaky roof. Houses and wealth are inherited from parents, but a prudent wife is from the Lord. Laziness brings on deep sleep and shiftless good hunger. Whoever keeps commandments keeps their life, but whoever shows contempt for their ways will die. Whoever is kind to the poor lends to the Lord, and he will reward them for what they have done. Discipline your children, for in that there is hope. Do not be a willing party to their death. A hot-tempered person must pay the penalty. Rescue them, and you will have to do it, and you will have to do it again.
Okay, thank you. I think one of the verses that really stands out to me, there's several in this section, but verse 18, discipline your son for there is hope. Do not set your heart on putting him to death. When we talk about the learning about or figuring out what these proverbs are talking about by looking at kind of some of the contrasts, this seems kind of extreme, that the opposite of contrast to discipline is putting him to death. But we really need to look at the consequences of raising our children and how serious that is. That if we fail to instill in them a love for truth, discipline, responsibility, love and knowledge of God, that we could be talking about helping them down the path to their own spiritual death. So I think that is one of the many good verses in Proverbs on parenting that reminds us to be diligent in that work, how serious and important it is.
Like number 17, He who is kind to the poor lends to the Lord, and he will reward him for what he has done. Reminds me of the Beatitudes.
It makes me think of whatever you've done for the least of these, you've done for me, kind of the same thing. Mm-hmm. Like if you feed those who are in need or visit them, it's the same as doing it for the Lord.
There's a theme of anger as well. 12, the king's anger is like a lion's roar. His favor is like dew on the grass. And then 19, hot-tempered people must pay the penalty. If you rescue them once, you will have to do it again. There's another one.
11 talks about slow to anger.
It's such a sad picture in 19 of like, you'll have to just like keep pulling this wrathful person off of someone else over and over again. Like you pull him off the fight and he jumps back in, you pull him back. And like, there's just like the idea of not being able to save him from his own stupidity.
Yeah. And we've talked many times before about in Proverbs about the fool who does not accept or receive correction. There's gonna be certain people that, you know, you're gonna jump in there and try to save them or stop them or help them, and they're just gonna jump right back in as soon as you think you've got it straightened out. Verse 12 in particular, the king's wrath is like the growling of a lion, but his favor is like the dew of the grass. One you're very afraid of, one you don't want anything to do with, right? But the other is, my eye just jumped up to the continual dripping of rain instead of the dew on the grass. That's annoying. The dew on the grass is a pleasant, favorable, refreshing thing. And this just reminds me of other times we've talked about how God has put people in power to be doing good and to be in some ways doing you know, kind of some of the hands-on work for him. And I can't think of the passage right now that talks about government being put in place to reward the good. And
Romans 13.
Yeah, thank you, Jacob. Yeah. Yeah, Romans 13. That if you are in a position of power, that's a tremendous responsibility. And that if you want to do it right and do well at it, you're going to have to know what God's will is and realize that you're there by his will to do his will. And so whether it's both for discipline, like the growling of the lion, or for administering favor, there are both ways in which someone who's in a position of power can be like God in how they handle.
Do these things it's being compared to, does it have anything to do with they're both fairly short-lived? I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but that's what kind of struck me is like the king who's anger is like a growling of lying. That's not like a permanent thing. Or the dew on the grass, like it is like one is scary and one is pleasant. But I was thinking about like other proverbs where it talks about like don't eat the king's delicacies. Like don't get too wrapped up in what those who have temporary power think of you. So I didn't know if that had anything to do with it or if I was completely on the wrong track with that.
Yeah. Stephen, go ahead.
There are a few places that talk about that dew is used as a biblical image of something that's short-lived. I think it's Hosea 6 where it talks about your love is like a morning cloud. It's like the dew, you know, the sun comes up and it's gone. Referring to the people's short-lived repentance or turning to God. But a lot of times dew is a very favorable image. It reminds us of Eden almost, where the mist comes up from the ground and it's God's favor. It's a picture of abundance of the world being cultivated. So I'm inclined in the context here to talk more about when the king's angry, it's like a crouching lion. Like he's mad. That's like the growling of the lion, but you could get consumed if you're not careful. But his favor is like nourishment. It can really make things abundant if the king is on your side, is the way I see that. The do can go both ways, but it is interesting to see how it's used other places.
Verse 14, I'm struggling to understand the contrast. Like, the house of wealth are inherited from fathers, but a prudent wife is from the Lord. Like, I just don't quite get what he's getting at there.
I think it's a comparison of maybe even different types of treasures, where it's like these physical things that most people aspire for or work for is something that you just inherit or you can get just from anyone passing it down to you, but your father can't pass down a good woman to you. You know, that's something that you have to find, you have to seek out. That is a treasure that you have to find your own. That's what I took from it. Yeah.
Or the contrast of fathers, like you can inherit this from your earthly father, but this mm-hmm. other comes from the heavenly father.
Yeah. I wondered if it was like kind of a contrast in terms of value. Like house and wealth is just like, well, maybe you can get that from your parents, but the source of a prudent wife is from God himself, that's a blessing from God. And so just kind of the contrast of values, opposed to like a just an earthly physical blessing versus a more spiritual blessing.
Like all three.
It is cool though that like it talks about the Lord giving us good spouses, and like the New Testament doesn't really talk that much about marriage, and so sometimes I wonder like, well, how, like, I know it's important, but like, well, how important is it if the New Testament doesn't really delve into it that much? But like here him talking about like, you know, the Lord wants to have a good spouse, and it is from him that we can grow and learn and become good spouses.
I like 11 too. But I think 11 speaks about peace and freedom. Speaking about the wisdom, we all love to have patience all the time. but having that wisdom to sit back and be a problem solver, to sit back and not be reactionary, it kind of gives you that peace that you can sometime not outthink the other person, but think for the other person and come out with a reasonable outcome. It just makes things, and like you're talking about, spouses. I mean, you know, wouldn't we love to be able to use wisdom a lot, you know, with arguments and things like that, that we sit back and we get high-headed at it, and it's like, okay, if we just would have used a little wisdom, we might have prayed about this, you know, the outcome. And then in the second part, it is one glory to overlook an offense. I mean, that ties right to it. And like when we hold offenses against people, when we don't forgive, it's that, and the third, like, we know what that does to our hearts. And it's just, like I said, that peace and freedom. I know that's something that I always search for.
Reading a verse like this makes me think of our perspective. Like if you were to do something like, I don't know, scuff my shoe, like I'm really upset about that. What does that mean? I think it's really, really important. My shoes. Right? That's petty, right? But if... So that's an extreme on the small end. But if we are the kind of person who can be not easily angered, slow to wrath, slow to anger, and a person who can easily overlook an offense, even a not small offense, what does that indicate about us?
We value that person.
Yeah, we value the person, or we value, you know, something much more important than whatever it is that was the offense was. So whether that's just thinking about our perspective of I'm aiming for heaven, heaven's what's important, serving God's what's important, and anything that happens down here, I can let that roll off my back because I've got something so much better that whether or not things go perfectly here really doesn't make a difference to that. So perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As you say, there, dealing with this verse, there have been times where I'll be really frustrated. In a moment, I'll be really frustrated, really angry with something that has little to no impact or effect on my life. I'll just be like, I need to get this feeling off my chest. And I need to, whether it's a person or it's a thing where it's like, I need to just let them know right now. If I have that one moment of clarity where I'm like, is it really that big of a deal? Chances are in like 10 minutes, I'm going to completely forget about it, and I'm going to move on. So if those moments where we just catch ourselves happen more often, I think it's going to lead to a much more peaceful life.
Thanks for those 10 minutes in an argument because you brought it up.
Right. Right. It's like, all right, well, now it is a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, verse 11, to especially that second line, it is his glory to overlook an offense. This goes along with all the comments that were already made, but that reminds me a lot of what Jesus taught in the Sermon on the Mount, especially about anger and not retaliating. And the line, it is his glory to overlook an offense, to me that kind of brings up the idea of almost, someone who maybe at least legally has, a right to seek recompense, for something wrong done against him. And it reminds me of, Jesus in Matthew 5 quoting that statement, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, which, and saying, not to do that, but instead, not to resist an evil person. And so, obviously Jesus is quoting scripture there. That's, part of the Mosaic law, eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth. But that kind of establishes the legal precedent or limit of, how much you can get back from an offense. But in Proverbs and what Jesus is saying, I think is, it's even better to just let it go. Don't try to get back something. Don't continue to try to retaliate. And instead just let it go.
Yeah. And specifically to that end, I reminded me of 1 Corinthians 6, where Paul is talking to the brethren saying, I can't believe you're taking each other to court. In verse 7, he says, to have lawsuits at all with one another is already a defeat for you. Why not rather suffer wrong? Why not rather be defrauded?
Mm-hmm.
If this is what, these worldly things is what's most important to us, then you can see why you're going to go after somebody for everything you legally can, or even more in some cases. But if you're willing to let those things go, it really helps to show where our priorities are, or vice versa. If our priorities are there, it will help us to let those things go.
Mm-hmm.
Any other thoughts on 11 or any of the other verses through 19?
Go on.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, I think it's a hard balance with verse 11 to want to hold someone accountable, especially as like Christians. It's easy to be like, well, they need to know that what they did was wrong or sinful or hurtful, but then to also be able to let it go. Like, it's like, well, if I let it go, then they're not gonna realize that it was wrong or that was hurtful. And I just find that balance really hard.
Like, humbling.
Guilty.
Is there a difference between like overlooking an offense, maybe somebody did something without realizing, like, that hurt my feelings, or they didn't realize that, somebody does something kind of unknowingly versus, like, if somebody sins against you and it says go to them and talk to them, you and them alone, like, is there kind of a difference in terms of what you can overlook versus, like, something where it's, like, because if somebody does something to me and it wasn't coming out of a bad place, their heart at all, like, do I just need to let it go? Versus, like, they're showing, like, oh, there's actually a problem here and I want to help them. Like, is there a distinction or does offense cover both?
Yeah. I think it would be kind of a case-to-case basis, because we are free to forgive offenses against us, but we are not in a position to forgive offenses against God. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that the other line, the parallel of overlooking an offense is being slow to anger. And so I think that helps put it in a context more of like the little things that we're tempted to blow up about. This person's done something that's offensive to me, but it's not a big thing. I could get really irritated and be quick to anger and blow up at it. But I also think that there are times where overlooking an offense doesn't mean it goes unaddressed. But as far as my reaction is concerned, I'm not holding it against that person. I'm not, you know, pursuing justice myself. But if it is something that's sinful, if it is something that needs to be addressed, I'm going to do that in the right way. And through the proper channels, like Matthew 18, you know, go to him alone, take two or three witnesses, you know, that kind of thing. But I think a lot of this is just talking about the stuff that makes us quick to anger that should have been overlooked. And we didn't overlook it, and we blew up, and we were not quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger, like James talks about.
Yeah, there's a situation at work with somebody from another company that I'm dealing with that has been very frustrating. So I decided I would write down what it was that I was feeling upset about. And just to be able to like see it. So not in an email that I could accidentally send. Just open a blank Word document and write down, here's what has happened, here's what's transpired. And so I can look at it and say, is this actually a problem? And I determined it was. So I reviewed it about 3 or 4 times, toning down some words here and there. And then I sent it to somebody who was part of the issue on our side and said, I'm going to defer to you, but here's the situation. You know, they were a part of it already. It wasn't like, this is the person who's in charge of this situation anyway. So I went to them, I'm going to defer to you because I really wanted him to know that in as much as I was describing the wrong and that I was not going to fly off the handle and do anything foolish. That was really, really, really important to me, that like even he would know, like I'm not going to do anything stupid or crazy. But here's the situation. I defer to you. And there's part of me that really, really would like to have justice in this situation. But we'll be fine no matter what. So I'll let John handle it and go about doing my job. Right, John?
Yeah. Sorry, I'm privy to the situation.
For those of you who don't know, Joe and I work.
I'm his cubicle mate. So okay. I know all the juicy deets, as Proverbs 18 would say.
So anyway, it's one of those things. Take a moment, you know, like sometimes writing it down so you can like, maybe there's something that will help in terms of, but on the one hand, it kind of feels good to put it in writing, but then on the other hand, it gives you that space, that moment, that like, okay, is this really important? Because maybe you're going to find, like you said, like right. 10 minutes later, not a big deal. But you have that moment for prudence and then proceed.
Dainty morsels.
Oh, nice. Yeah, sorry, I missed that. I was just going to say real quick, that makes me think of prayer. Because I've done that before, where I'll write things out, and then a lot of times it turns into a prayer.
Yeah.
And it makes sense why God tells us to pray.
Right. And, saying to God, here's what happened. The Psalms are full of this. Look, these people have done this to me, but I'm leaving it in your hands. So... Let's move on.
Oh, wait, can I, before you move on?
Go ahead, sorry.
Somebody referenced James, but I didn't get, like, more than that. And I know it's not a big book, but I don't have the time yet. Yeah.
That was...
Slow to Anger, and then, yeah.
Yeah, it's James 1, hang on.
Thank you.
It's, let me find the verse real quick for you here. James 1...
I think it's 19.
Verse 19. Yes. Know this, my beloved brothers, let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger, for the anger of man does not produce the righteousness of God. So that's verses 19 and 20.
Great, great.
Sharon, were you going to say something earlier?
Oh, yeah. I was just going to, can you guys can hear me and see me, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I know it sometimes goes poorly, but. We mentioned verse 17 earlier, and it just reminds me of back in chapter 11 where he talks about verse 24, there is one who scatters yet increases more, and there is one who withholds more than is right, but it leads to poverty, and then talks about generous soul be made rich. So it just, and then I thought of a verse in Second Chronicles or First Chronicles chapter 16 where God is, or no, David is thanking God for, or he's praising God because they're about to build the temple. And this verse 16 in the last chapter 29, it says, "O Lord our God, all this abundance that we've prepared to build you a house for your holy name is from your hand and all and is of your own." And so, and that's David praising God. And that just really strikes me how like everything that we own is from God, and that really he owns it all. And and like in that chapter 29 verse 17 he continues to talk, and one of the things he talks about is how they're willingly giving their like they're willingly giving it to God. And I guess when I think about it, everything that we own is not ours, it's actually God's, except maybe our free will. Technically, like God lets us own that, so that's what we get to choose to give him. And and so that this verse 17 just reminds me of like really it's all his. So whatever you're giving is actually it's not yours, it's his. And he's going to, and then it just cool how he says he will pay back what he will pay back what he has given.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, lends to the Lord, yeah.
All right, well, let's read 20 through 29. Would someone like to read those verses for us?
You can read.
Go ahead, Matt.
This is 20 through 29?
Yeah.
Get all the advice and instruction you can so you'll be wise for the rest of your life. You can make many plans, but the Lord's purpose will prevail. Loyalty makes a person attractive. It is better to be poor than dishonest. Fear of the Lord leads to life, bringing security and protection from harm. Lazy people take food in their hand, but it doesn't even lift it to their mouth. If you punish a mocker, the simple-minded will learn a lesson. If you correct the wise, they will be all the wiser. Children who mistreat their father or chase away their mother are an embarrassment and a public disgrace. If you stop listening to instruction, my child, you will turn your back on knowledge. A corrupt witness makes a mockery of justice, but the mouth of the wicked gulps down evil, and punishment is made for mockers, and the backs of fools are made to be beat.
Can you read your 25 again?
If you punish a mocker, the simple-minded will learn a lesson. If you correct the wise, they will be all the wiser.
Yeah, so that's one that I looked at because at first glance, wasn't sure what the contrast was between, because obviously there's a contrast between a scoffer and a man of understanding. But at least one difference I saw is you strike a scoffer and the simple will learn prudence or learn a lesson. Versus reprove a man of understanding, he will gain knowledge. And I see the difference in the severity of the correction that's needed. Like somebody's going to need a beating to learn the lesson, but a wise person, you can just speak to them and just a, you know, a word of correction is all that they need to learn and to you know, make correction. Any other thoughts on?
My favorite was 21. You can make many plans, but the Lord's purpose will prevail.
Yeah. And that reminded me of another James reference. James 4:13.
Yeah, I'm stealing off my notes.
No.
I listened. I was like, oh, this is another James reference.
Yeah. Yeah. James 4:13, you know, those who would say, today we will go and do such and such. Don't know what the future holds.
Yeah. I like 23. I think this is just a, cause some might, you know, I have had people read that before and be like, untouched by any trouble, right? This, that, and the third, but it's clearly is saying, you know, the fear of the Lord, you know, leads to life, leads to our salvation, leads to our spiritualness. And then, of course, once we are translated, you know, from dying to life, then nothing can harm us, you know. And so that's just like one of his beautiful promises, that hope that Paul talks about probably a million times, you know, the hope of the glory.
Yeah.
So,
yes. Yeah. Like, how often do you hear somebody say, oh, how can you sleep at night? Right, you know, to somebody who has a guilty conscience or should have a guilty conscience.
Right.
But, I mean, and when we're troubled by things, it makes it hard for us to sleep. But the fact here, verse 23, it says, the fear of the Lord leads to life. Whoever has it rests satisfied. Mm-hmm. That's a really good measure. Like, no matter what else is going on and other things that are legitimately troubling at this time, if we have the fear of the Lord, we can sleep soundly.
Right. We're keeping with that. It's like, I don't know. It's just when you just bask in the glory and his goodness, even though how wretched we might be, just knowing the love and the grace that he showed us and that we were able to take a hold of it. And now through these Bible studies and through learning and getting closer to him, it's just, you know, try to taste the Lord and see that he is good, basically. Yeah. And you know, when you say that, you know, with all that's going on in the world now, and like I said, I work, I'm account manager for 7-Up, so I'm in the grocery stores doing my orders, and, you know, people are just, you know, running around and like, oh, did you see on the news? Did you see? And they look at me crazy when I'm like, you know what? I really don't look at the news. I mean, I really, yeah. You know, and they're like, you know, or they might say something like, yeah, that happened. Yeah, you didn't know about this that killed so many people in it. And I said, no, I really don't. And that's that, you know, that rest that it's like, you know, no, like you said, no matter what is going on around us, like we have this hope and we know that we got something greater than this. And when all hell breaks loose, you know it will be.
Going off of that, like that rest in that assurance in God kind of goes along with 21, many are the plans in the mind of a man, but it's the purpose of the Lord that will stand, where it's like, lately I find it so easy to get lost in like, what's going to happen, and like, just all the things that could go wrong, and every time you hear about something going crazily wrong for somebody else, it's like, well, that could happen to me, like, I could wake up one day and be paralyzed, and you're like, just... there's so many things that can happen to us. And so having that rest and that satisfaction in the Lord and knowing that you have life in that, even if your life gets messed up, is just helpful.
A couple that I noticed that kind of had the same type of idea were in verse 20 and in verse 27, where it was basically calling us to keep learning and keep gaining wisdom. I was in a study earlier where it was talking about the church in Laodicea, where they were just kind of apathetic and kind of self-satisfied with where they were. and we were just discussing what a dangerous place that is to be, like if we kind of stop caring spiritually, that if we don't care, then it's really hard to get motivated and repent when we should and service we should and be zealous for good works, because if in our mind we're just apathetic and not caring and really can't be bothered, just how dangerous that is. And so these ones that are encourages, like, keep learning, keep growing, keep getting wisdom. Don't get satisfied with where you are and get stuck and end up, you know, being spewed out of the mouth.
Do you think those significances of 24, the lazy people take food in their hand but don't even lift it to their mouth?
I think the fact that we're laughing at it is quite important. I mean,
somebody is so lazy that they're like, I'm gonna like reach into this bowl of Cheetos, but oh my goodness, I have to bring it back up to my mouth.
I don't know why, but I always picture a bowl of Cheetos.
Like,
that's the same thing. Like, you got the cheesy fingers going on, and yes. You went for another handful, and you're like, I'm done. I'm not even gonna eat. Like,
that's,
I don't know why it's the Cheetos.
Picture. Why are you scooping oatmeal out with your fingers? You're lazy to get up and get a spoon.
I think that, like, in practicality, it's like, I guess, kind of just like a picture to ourselves of, like, this is how stupid you look sometimes when you're lazy. Like, you look like a person that won't even, like, put food in their mouth, I guess.
Like a caricature.
Yeah.
Hyperbole.
Yeah, that's how I would look at it. Like, you're so lazy, it'd be like that your life might just be a whole perspective. And it's like, you know what? I really want to eat this, but I'm just, you know, like you said, I'm just so lazy. I really don't even want to get down and pour, you know, my milk in my cereal. You know, or you know, I really want to go down the street to the store. But man, I just lay here and just starve, you know.
I mean, the Bible even says if you don't work, you shouldn't eat either, you know. So I think that's that kind of idea where it's like even the tiniest amount possible to get to that end result, you're not willing to deal with. It's just a very foolish.
On it.
Well, you know, this verse relates, like, talking about laziness, verse 15 also is talking about laziness. And I think it's interesting too how verse 16, he's saying, he who keeps the commandments keeps his soul, but he who is careless of his ways will die. Well, that latter half, the careless of his ways will die, maybe that's talking about the spiritual death, but also I think it can relate, it could talk about physical too. And you think about if a commandment would be to not be lazy and not be idle, and here, if you're not going to keep those commandments, you're careless of your ways, you will die. Well, if an idle person will suffer hunger, it could ultimately result in death. So it's kind of relates.
Stephen, you had your hand up.
Yeah, I think there may also be something here that obviously this is hyperbole, probably, that, you know, he won't even, he puts his hand like he's going to eat something and he won't even finish. But that laziness, often is the idea of like he's bitten off more than he can chew. Like you start something, but you're not willing to finish it. There may be a broader principle there of just diligence, seeing something through to the end, even if it's a bite of food. there may be something to that.
I think you're still muted, Dan. Dan, we still can't hear you.
So I think somebody messaged to say that she's on mute.
You want me to unmute her? You're the admin.
Oh, no, I'm not sure. I'm sorry, Dan. Stephen, can you say something or
Sharon or Elizabeth?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay, thanks. So just checking, making sure it's not our side. Sorry, Deanne.
Is it mine?
Oh, there you are.
Can you hear me now? Okay.
Yeah.
No wonder why you didn't hear me all the way through.
Sorry.
21, doesn't that kind of set up for the rest of those, though? Because if it's saying many are the plans in man's heart, but it's the Lord's purpose that prevails. So depending on our plans, whether to be a sluggard, mocker, or the one that loves the father and stuff, his plans for those who don't act the right way is the result in what the rest of the verse says of each of those, where if we're rebuking, I mean, that's the Lord's purpose too. So doesn't that kind of set up for 22 through 29, 21?
Yeah, that's a really interesting thought. I hadn't thought about that because normally I think about these just in terms of standalone.
Mm-hmm. It just seems like because the way they all fall, it's like God's not going to put up with a slugger. So his purpose is going to be through, you know, it'll bring it back to his mouth. And the mocker, will be rebuked because his purpose for those who can lead back in a way to those that will come back. And so it just seems like that was kind of a setup for the rest of those to me.
Yeah. Go ahead, Tim.
No, sorry, go ahead, Jacob.
Well, I was going to go back to verse 24. So if you had a comment on that, then go ahead. No, okay. Well, so back in verse 24, so there's another proverb back in chapter 12, actually, that I think is really parallel. Proverbs 12, verse 27, which reads, "Whoever is slothful will not roast his game, excuse me. And so it's almost the idea of, you know, a man he's gone out, he's hunted an animal hunted an animal, you know, and taken it. But, you know, he gets it back and he decides, well, you know, I don't really want to, you know, go through the effort to cook this. And so, you know, presumably it rots and goes to waste. So, you know, again, it's that idea of you start to provide for yourself to get something you need, but you don't see it through. You're too lazy to see it through. And so, like Stephen mentioned, I think the putting your hand in the bowl and being too lazy to bring it back, it's probably hyperbole. I certainly don't know anyone, you know, who would do that. But I think, you know, there's a lot of times that we would start out to try to provide for ourselves, but really decide that, you know, it's just going to be too much effort. And maybe ultimately there's a spiritual application to that. You know, once we've started to follow God, we've become Christians, dedicated our lives to him, but then, you know, we decide maybe it's too much effort, it's too much work, and so we fall back into sin and fall away from him.
Well, and I think, you know, that in this picture, this person values the ease of not raising their arm over the benefit of being able to eat. And there are times that we value comfort over what should be the obvious benefit of the gift of God's salvation, but we're just not willing to follow through with the hard things that asks of us sometimes because we're you know, seduced by ease and comfort.
Mm-hmm.
And it really shows what we truly think is more important.
Yeah. I like the way you put it, valuing our ease over, you know, over the end result.
Kind of putting it in context with the theme of the rest of the stuff that was in 19 with kind of teaching and kind of just establishing, like you said, teaching your children with good discipline, things like that. Mm-hmm. I think you're right with the hyperbole.
Yeah. It, ultimately deciding it's not worth it. We are out of time. Any last closing comments? Well, Well, thank you all so much for very good discussion. Let's close with a prayer. Our good Father in heaven, we thank you so much for this day, and we thank you for your wisdom and sharing it to us, sharing it with us in this way, and how helpful it is to read these things together and to see how your word works, how your wisdom works together, how we can benefit from these reminders and from you teaching us and showing us the better way of serving you and putting you first. There are times, God, that we fall short in our self-discipline. There are times where we are seduced by ease and comfort. We fail to see, fail to remember how important it is to serve you and how much you've done for us and how much better our lives are with you. And we sometimes forget the cost of our sin, how terrible it is. And when we lose our sight, when we lose our perspective, please help bring us back through your word or through studies like this, when we can encourage each other in your word. Please help us to keep this perspective that keeps our eyes and our hope set on the glory that is yet to come, in the hope that we have in Jesus, and we thank you for providing that for us. Please watch over us and keep us all in your care. We especially ask right now that you be with Keith, and please comfort Deanne as well, as so she can know that he's all right. Please watch over them and keep them in your care. We pray these things in Jesus' name.
Amen.
Thank you. Thank you all.
See y'all from the other side tonight.
Yeah.
Thanks for teaching, Tim.
Yeah, it's easy to fill in on this kind of study when there's so much good participation and conversation and discussion. My pleasure. I don't
remember teaching. Yes, thank you for covering for me tonight. Brianne's doing maybe a little bit better. For those who don't know, my wife is 24 weeks pregnant, and she got COVID and, she had 2 days of a lot of just body pain, but the last 7 days or so, she's just had a really bad cough. Thankfully her pulse ox numbers have been like 100, like she's been, her lungs have been in good condition on that level. But she's had a ton of drainage and mucus and stuff, and is just constantly coughing. And so it makes it very hard to sleep, which makes it everything else hard. And so she's hanging in there, but we've been kind of in a holding pattern since Thursday or Friday of last week. And we're hoping that we're get out of the holding pattern soon. She's taking, you know, Mucinex and other things that she can take while she's pregnant. Appreciate Tim, you filling in so I can be here with the girls and make sure they're got what they need. So I appreciate it.
Somebody made a cameo appearance in the background there.
Yes, they did. They made a few other cameo appearances. I had to mediate a little bit and practice some parenting from Proverbs for a minute there. So,
there you go.
Always opportunities, sometimes mid-study, to apply what we're learning. So
yes.
Do the girls have COVID symptoms, or are they doing fine now?
The girls, we suspect that they've had it. It's kind of hard because there's so many little colds and things going around. They both had fevers last Thursday, Friday, Saturday, kind of one after the other. And the older one, Fiona, who's 5, has had a cough for a while. The younger one, Josie, who's 2, just kind of had the fever, and she's had some mild congestion. But again, that could be COVID for girls that age. Yeah. It's just so hard to know exactly how it manifests in everybody. none of us have been distancing from each other, which at this point, Brianne, today would have been 10 days since Brianne. And now they're saying 5 days quarantine and then 5 days with a mask. Things have changed, you know, over time. So we suspect that they've all had it at this point. Honestly, I hope that they've all had it at this point so we don't have round three or whatever, you know, coming down the line. But thankfully, things could be a lot worse. So we're grateful that it's been a hard week of sickness, but we're grateful that everybody's overall doing well.
Well, we'll keep you in prayer.
Thank you, Brandon. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Oh, I'm well. Thank you. I'm well.
Talking about that.
Jacob, Sharon, good to see you guys.
Yeah, good to see
Elizabeth,
you too.
Glad you can make it back.
Bye.
Ned thinking of some jokes. Hello. You know, he didn't have a pen. So instead of getting up, he decided just to convince himself that the jokes were.
Wow. Speaking of comedians, I was like scrolling through Instagram and I happened to see a video of, I think it was that guy, Tim, Christian comedian guy, Tim Hawkins.
Tim Hawkins.
That one. And he was making the joke about Job's wife and how, like, Satan intentionally left Job's wife unharmed because she'd come up later and mess with him. And it was exactly what we were talking about in our Job class. And I just thought that was so funny that the comedian picked up on that. routine.
The lazy man with the hidden dish. Teresa Harris was talking about that proverb the other day. She said one time she was talking to somebody and they were like somewhere with food to eat and the person said, well, that looks delicious, but I just can't be bothered to chew it.
What?
So it was like a very literal.
What?
It was a very literal.
Why would someone say
that? I don't know. Like, I guess they just felt really lazy. I don't know. But it was like, I don't think I'd ever heard of like that happening. So bad.
Bother to chew it.
And I'm gonna have that quote that got like, I just can't. Not worth chewing.
I mean, I get like not being willing to do that for seconds. Like, I've been there, but like,
no, if it was cow stomach or whatever.
Oh, yeah, it tastes good.
They're not overly complicated. They're just,
oh boy.
We're not in the lake.
Do you ever get too lazy to get ready for bed? Like too tired to get up to like,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Bed?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I always feel really seen by that proverb because of my extreme food laziness, especially when I was single. Oh. And Brianne helped me see how foolish my ways were. I mean, I was really like, I would never hardly even microwave food. Like, I wanted zero preparation, like at all. So I was eating like peanut butter and jelly, tuna straight out of the can, pickles, pepperoni, like it was really bad. And then when Brianne started cooking for me, like actually really good meals, she wanted me to like put all the toppings on things, you know, like put the salad dressing on the salad. And I didn't even do that. And I there was a time early in our marriage where we, you know, they have these like tremendous trifles, like little bitty things that become a big deal. Like, I learned that just put the dressing on the salad. It's worth it.
Not too hard.
It's not too hard.
It
tastes better.
Yeah, it's offensive when you like make someone a dish and they won't bother to like fix it up a little bit or like make it the way it's supposed to. It's like, I made this for you and you won't even like assemble it the right way.
Yeah.
Yes. Which, by the way, thank y'all again. We did assemble the soup that y'all gave us for tonight. Yeah. So thank you.
Good. I'm glad you were able to confirm that for us.
Well, I'll tell you, like, I've learned. Like, and Brianne actually, it's kind of funny. Like, she will like be like, oh, like you put all the sauces on it. I'm so proud of you. Like, That's like we're six years in, and she's still congratulating me when I like add all of the possible things into something. And especially she congratulates me when it's leftovers, and I did it without her like getting the stuff out. So I actually got all of the things out and put them all together, and she's like, "Oh, wow!" And I'm like.
It's really good if I can make my leftovers for lunch before dinner's put away, because then it's like schoolwork. There's like six different dishes. I don't have to pull all those out of the refrigerator.
Tell them about the sandwich.
It's a different subject, but one time I decided, I thought, I like sandwiches a lot. What if it was just all the same ingredients in the same proportions, just in a different format? So I made a sandwich the same way I normally do, and I threw it in the food processor.
It's like a blender.
And it didn't work.
I was gonna say, this is the squirrel in the blender.
It wasn't the same. It didn't have the same. It was all the same parts, all the same ingredients.
Probably evolution.
It
wouldn't
taste the same if you didn't mix up an avocado smoothie.
Right. Texture matters.
That's what
and
I learned.
And the amount you get with each bite, you know.
Yes.
Well, see, this, if it's well blended, it's homogenized. Everything is
a sandwich isn't homogenized.
Right.
It's not even.